Welcome to the Invisible Church Podcast. I'm Pastor Tim Smith of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in New Ulm, Minnesota. In this half hour, we meditate on Genesis 1, verses 14 to 19, the fourth day of creation. In day three, we begin, and God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear." And it was so. So most of the dry ground becomes what?
Land.
And we would, what kind of land? Big or little? We would guess big. What do we call the biggest pieces of land?
Continents.
Yeah, continents. And there are, we have continents, two big ones on this hemisphere, North America, right? South America. Are Europe and Asia two continents or one?
Two.
Yeah. If I was walking, I would say one, but I went to school, so I say two. Africa's one, right? And then is Australia a continent or not?
Yes.
The current encyclopedia and Wikipedia articles say it's kind of the biggest island and kind of the smallest continent. So, but
it's something.
Yes, it is. I suppose so is the Northern Oriole, but enough of that. And then Antarctica is the other continent. Any of you been to Antarctica? Professor Sponholz isn't here. Have you ever heard him speak about his travels there in the 60s?
Yeah.
Do you all know that there's a mountain there named after him? Mount Sponholz was discovered by his expedition. He wasn't leading it. He was one of the meteorologists. But they were discovering quite a few new mountains. If you go to Antarctica, if you go there the way that we would go, which is via South America, there is a kind of a horn that sticks up out of Antarctica. It's the only feature most of us can recognize that kind of meets South America's tip, where Antarctica kind of flips up there. That's the coast of something called the Ross Ice Shelf, and you continue down that peninsula, the only real peninsula in Antarctica, and you keep going into the interior, there's a mountain chain there that group discovered. And one of them is Mount Sponholz. And I looked it up a couple of times on Google Earth, because you can look at things. And of course, it just gives you a map of white with a little plus sign in the middle of it that says with a summit height or something like that. But it's there. It's pretty cool. So the ground gathers into one place. And God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. The Hebrew word for land is eretz, or aretz, if it's in pause. And there is a newspaper, I believe, in Israel right now called Haaretz, the land, because the people of Israel consider that their land is theirs by right. Of course, the Palestinians consider that same land is theirs by right. And that debate's heating up again these days. Have you heard that on the radio? Once again, the Israel versus Palestine question, should it be one land or should it be two lands? Should they have two countries? They say two states or one state, you know, and what's the solution? It's a difficult question because the Jews were not in Israel for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. It really was the nation of Palestine for a long time. When did the Jews go back to Israel? Anybody know? Or whose idea it was? 1948, 47 was the war. And following the war, a British lord named Lord Balfour, as in what an umpire would say before you walk, right? Balfour. He came up with the idea that they should have a separate, well, now you won't remember, you won't forget it though, right? He said that they should have a separate state. And so without considering what this would be like, he told a couple million people, go live there. You know, how would you like it if 2 million people, say from India, suddenly showed up in the United States and said, well, this guy said we could live here, so you move, you know. And then what if our governor said, by the way, everybody who lives on the east side of Broadway, you know, is in one country, and everybody on the west side of Broadway is in the other country? And I'm going to put up wire in between, a barbed wire in between the two. We get pretty angry, I think. And that's and they've been angry for a long time. The story of the Dead Sea Scrolls is wrapped up in that incident, by the way, because that's when they were discovered. And they were sort of squirreled away during the war. And there's a whole drama there that reads like a romance. That's pretty interesting, but for another time. So land and sea. Here we have some land and sea. Anybody know where there's a wilderness this pristine left on earth? Where this would be? I took it off a screensaver that came on with my computer. I believe this is Tasmania or something like that. Dan?
When these verses talk about and God called them seas,
yeah.
Is it accurate that that word is plural?
Sure, yamim.
And therefore, does that substantiate that there was more than one continent? And therefore,
I'm not sure, because Pangaea. I'm not sure, because sometimes water just implies, in the plural, can just mean lots. The many waters. You know, how many lakes does Minnesota have? You ever heard that discussion? Every summer, it seems like when fishing season opens, somebody on the radio talks about that. There's a number. It's 10,000 lakes, right? And yet, if you actually list them, you know, how big does it have to be a lake, or how deep does it have to be, or how permanent does it have to be? It has to be spring fed or whatever, and you never get the same number, but it's around 10,000. But water can mean many, because there's just a lot of it. Which is my doctor and I talked about this when my wife was about to have our first baby. Because what breaks?
The water.
That's not what they say in the doctor's office. They say the waters. They always use plural. Yeah. So the waters break. That's what happened to Laura Martins yesterday. Oh, I just dropped that bomb on you? I probably did. We have a new daughter in the congregation. Yana, I think. Right? Yana. It's a feminine of John. Yana. So gift. Something like that. God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds. And it was so. Why does God spend so much time making sure that we understand that these were fruit trees with seeds in them? What has he just done?
Reproduction.
God is shifting from creator to provider. The work of God the Father in the beginning is creation, but it moves into a provision where he is the provider. He still provides, right? Richly and daily, providing us with clothing and shoes, meat and drink, house and home, land, cattle, and all my goods, right? And all that I need to keep my body in life, and he does it through mostly natural means. And so that's what we have the beginning of here. Is the natural means for this. So there are various kinds. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seeds according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. Do we have to talk about the difference between trees and plants? I'd rather not. I suppose a trunk is involved. And so forth, but it doesn't really make much of a difference, because then you have the discussion, don't you? Is bamboo a bush or a tree? This is a trick question.
It's a tree.
No, it's a grass. Bamboo is a grass. It's wood, I know, but it's a grass. So there was evening and there was morning, the third day. So at this point, let's look at we're not quite there yet, this verse from Isaiah first. He who created the heavens, he is God, and he who fashioned and made the earth, he founded it. He did not create it to be empty, but formed it to be inhabited. He says, I am the Lord and there is no other. Another passage attesting to God's function here in the creation story by one of the greatest prophets. And note that the plants appeared before any seed, right? God made the plants yielded the seed. There is no which came first, you know, chicken or egg thing with plants, because the plants come and then the seeds come out of them. Every time I cut open a green pepper, I think, oh, I'm in danger of producing a million more green peppers if I'm not careful with these seeds, right? I don't want green peppers growing in my plumbing. I'd be careful about that. So in the first 3 days, God has separated things from the initial creation. Light from dark, right? And then sea from sky, that's a vertical separation. And now land from sea is a horizontal separation. God is making this and fashioning it and getting it all ready for who is coming. God is preparing a place for you. What did Jesus say before he ascended? I'm preparing a place for you. So just as in the creation story, in the account, we would say, of our resurrection, Jesus also talked about preparing a place for us in heaven, making sure that it's wide enough, tall enough, light enough, deep enough, and so forth for all of us. Okay? Now, here's your chart. The top half of your chart. If this helps, it helps. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Some people learned the days of creation in a little list or with a little rhyme. I tend to be a more visual learner. And so I like to just divide my upper left-hand square into a white triangle and a dark triangle. Don't spend too much time on it, but light and dark, right? And what's the wavy line at the bottom of day one? That's the water, because the Spirit is hovering over the surface of the deep on day one. That's day one. Then on day two, God separates the sky above. I have two puffy clouds there. And the water below, very perfectly drawn, by the way. And then on day three, what just happened? We had the land come away from the water. And on the land, God put trees. I have a couple kinds there, right? And grass. I didn't put a stone in this. I apologize. I should have put the rocks there. Because later, we're going to talk about the day the rocks were created and what day would the rocks have been formed. Well, he would have put them in place when the land came out of the sea. They would have been there all along, but they really were put in place in day three. That's the day the rocks then are placed where they're going to be. Okay? So first we have light being made. Then we have, as I said, this vertical separation up from down. And then this horizontal separation. Don't draw that on your chart. You're going to draw something else on your chart. And that is, after this, God is going to fill in what was on the upper three. He'll fill in with the bottom three. So he makes the place and then he fills it up. So what's day four? Sun, moon, and stars. And now we have something to make the light and to get in the way of it and make the darkness. That's the coming of the sun, moon, and stars. So I have a sun there, a star, a moon, and I have a planet. What planet is that? It's a test question. Saturn. Thank you, Darren. Although, did you know that all of the gas giants in our solar system all have rings?
But they're hard to see.
They are hard to, well, we're far away. Yeah. Right? But Jupiter has rings, Saturn has rings, Uranus has rings, and Neptune has rings. Day five fills in day two. So above the water, you have Ophim. That's the Hebrew word for flyers. Usually translated birds. And below the water, the Dagim, the swimmers. Usually translated with what?
Fish.
Yeah. However, people are too picky, I think, today with the word bird and the word fish. Because what flies besides birds?
Mosquitoes.
Yes. That's right. Could they have been created on day five? Sure, they're flyers, right? And what swims besides fish? but it's a swimmer. That Moses did not know Gregor Mendel and Carl Linnaeus and the guys who came up with our binomial nomenclature, the distinguishing of animals. Anything in the ocean is a swimmer, right? So all of the bizarre fish, the seahorse and the anemone and the sharks and whales and all of that, that's all part of swimmers. Okay, they're just dagim, swimmers. I say this because when I was a child, there were some in our circles. It doesn't matter if they were pastors or teachers or moms or dads. But they tended to say that Jonah could not possibly have been swallowed by a whale because the Hebrew word is dag, which means fish. And then you'd get all these arguments. Well, a fish has to have gills and it has to have this and that and scales and so forth. But the word dag doesn't really mean fish. It means swimmer. Could Jonah have been swallowed by a whale? Sure, he could have. Sure. So I just want to, a little knowledge is sometimes a dangerous thing. And somebody who's only had one semester of Hebrew can sometimes mess up a whole group for a long time. Because language is much more rich and deep than, you know, one semester of it can teach anybody. So the Ophim and the Dagim. And then on day 6, you have the land now is going to be finally filled up. We're not there yet, but animals, I don't know what animal that is.
It's a four-legged something.
It is, isn't it? It's a four-legged something.
Looks like a sheep.
Is it a sheep? I'll let that stand, Darren. Thank you. And you have Adam and Eve. They're drawn incorrectly. Why are they drawn incorrectly? Because she's wearing a dress, right? Yeah.
She's supposed to be wearing a fig leaf or something.
Yeah. Okay. However, I have found that this can help children to remember the days of creation. You draw a picture like this. As long as you don't remember this when you're teaching children or when you're helping grandchildren, don't put in too much detail because children always focus on the details. And they'll miss the whole concept if you put in smiley faces and this's and that's. Don't put in too much detail if you're trying to teach children. Dan?
I don't know that I've ever noticed this before, but it says on day 6 that God created both livestock and wild animals.
We're coming to that. I've got pictures. Oh, yeah. And a third category. There are 3 categories of animals on day 6. Yeah, move along the ground. Yeah. So it's not only deer and sheep and cows, but also lions and tigers and bears, and snakes and Komodo dragons and turtles and bugs. So 3 different categories that God categorizes. And later he'll bring those same categories back when he's talking about clean and unclean animals in Leviticus 11.
Wouldn't snake be a reptile?
So, sure, but still a created animal, right? Yeah. Okay, day 4. We're really moving now. We're on day 4. God said, "Let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years." What did the old NIV say? Seasons, I think.
Seasons.
And days and years. But the word season, the Hebrew word, really, I like sacred times because it was the one of the most sacred times of all to the Jews was the month. And they had a festival every new moon. So the new moon festival. What does the new moon mark? It marks the month. And that's how they told time. When is Passover every year without fail? It is 14 days after the new moon, after the spring equinox. Simple enough. Why don't we all remember that? Well, if it's 14 days after a new moon, what is the moon always like on the Passover? It's full. Yeah. When there's a full moon in either March or April, you should look on your calendar for Easter. Although we don't follow it exactly that way when we calculate the day of Easter, but it's close. By the way, that would be the Passover. That's 3 days before Easter, right? So the moon will no longer be full on Easter. It'll be a little bit past.
I think I just read that this is the first year in a long time that Passover is the same day as Easter.
Passover was not the same day as Easter. It was a day late. On the calendar, wasn't Passover yesterday, or something like that. It was not quite right on, or it was last week, but it wasn't Easter. It was during the week. I remember seeing that on my calendar. So sacred times and days and years, and let them be lights in the vault of the sky. I'm in verse 15 here, to give light on the earth, and it was so. Does the moon produce light? Actually, it only reflects light. It doesn't actually produce light.
It shows light.
Yeah.
It is like
if I shine a flashlight on your face, can your face reflect enough light onto a piece of paper to read it?
Maybe.
Is
the moon have a lot of phosphorus
Maybe.
In it or something?
No.
What does it reflect?
It's mostly just rock. But it's bright, though. It's bright.
So it's glowing.
And the glowing part comes from our atmosphere, not from the moon, because there's water in the atmosphere. But the sun actually creates light because the sun has thousands of nuclear explosions happening every second. That's the reaction of the sun. And the sun is a reaction of the very lowest number atoms on the periodic table of the elements, which are what? Hydrogen and helium, right? And hydrogen is being divided to create helium, and the explosion strikes other atoms, and you get another atomic explosion. That's what's going on. It's a fission, nuclear fission explosion that's going on, and there is plenty of fuel left, they say, for not just dozens of years, but many, many more than dozens of years in our, I think I heard not millions, but billions of years left in our sun. So as long as God wants it to go, it'll go. When God wants our sun to be done, it'll be done. There is a constellation near Orion. Do you all know Orion? You all know enough to find Orion with the three stars in the belt? That's the hunter.
I don't really see anything when I look up in the sky.
Near Orion is a little cloud that in the city, when you're in town, it's too bright to see them well, but it's called the Pleiades. It's a little cluster of stars, and they're up above his shoulder. He's chasing the Pleiades around, and the seven sisters, Electra, Maia, Merope, Sterope, Alcyone, Tagete, and the other one, Silano. It's the seven sisters. And one of them, back just a few hundred years ago, I think it was the Greeks were still around a couple thousand years ago, one of them exploded into a supernova. It blew up. And so now you look into the constellation of the Pleiades and you'll see six, not seven, because one of them is gone. Every once in a while, a star will end its life, or God will end a star's life, and it will annihilate itself. They become brighter for a while, then they wink out completely. That's what happens to a star. But they're the things that give light. The planets and comets and so forth, all of those things only reflect light. Only stars give light. Okay? Any of you, I've seen a comet in my lifetime. Any of you ever seen a comet? The last time Halley's Comet came, it was overcast for 4 days. None of us saw it. But I saw a comet back in the 70s with my mother called Kohoutek. There have been others like that where you actually got to see the streamer in the sky for a couple of nights in a row. Comets are pieces of something that when they get close to a star, they kind of vaporize. There's ice there. And that's what the tail is. The tail of a comet always faces away from the nearest star. So it actually, as it swings around, the tail swings with it. And goes. And so a comet for a while chases its tail as it's going away from a star. But that's what that is. It's the pieces of it melting. So God made two great lights. Oops, I'm sorry. the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. The stars move a little bit. Our North Star does not point exactly north, but it's moving. Did you all know that? Polaris, the North Star, it's moving. Our great-great-grandchildren will see it moving. It'll be much more closer to true north. So it's actually getting better as time goes on. Right now, it's off a little bit. Do you know how to find the North Star? No, it's not the brightest star. But no, it's not. The brightest star is usually Venus is the first thing you see at night. But the North Star, you can find, if you find the Big Dipper, the end of the Dipper, that's the pouring, the business end of a Dipper, those are called Dubi and Merak. They're the pointing stars. They point almost exactly at the North Star. And on the other side is a W called Cassiopeia. And the middle of the W points forward also from a different direction at the North Star. So if you find the Big Dipper and the W stars, as my sons called them when they were little, they point at, and then the North Star itself is the end of the handle of the Little Dipper. So that's how you find it. But it does point, it is in such a place that as the stars spin all night long, and they do, that one doesn't spin very much at all. So that one is north for us. So it does help you to navigate if you need to navigate. It's a very bad idea to find some other star and walk all night towards it because you're going to walk in a big arc because the stars spin at night. So you're going to always end up going west if you follow a star. You'll go kind of northwest of where you were. So be careful of that. Greater light, lesser light, we talked about that already. Terms sun and moon don't occur till after the flood. God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. Notice that when Moses talks about that vault, he talks about it as being the very top of everything, right? So in the New Testament, in 2 Corinthians, I think it's 12, Paul talks about a third heaven. Do you remember that passage? Paul says, I know a man who was caught up once into the third heaven and saw things there. So the concept in Greek thought was of three heavens. The first heaven is where the birds fly. The second heaven is where the sun, moon, and stars are. And the third heaven is where God is. And then you also get a concept of that on the earth. The ancients, and this is almost all the ancients, in some places in the Old Testament you find this, also in Greek literature, that the earth is on pillars, that somehow the earth was set up on pillars and they're below us in some way, and that below the pillars then they thought was hell. And that the sea then surrounds this sort of mass that we have of land, that God kind of made this like he was making the earth in a big dish. Or something like that. But we know that, our dish is actually a globe, right? That accounts for the way we see things and the reason why airplanes cannot fly in a straight line if they're going far, far away. They have to fly in an arc is because if an airplane flies from New York City to Portland, Oregon, and flies in a straight line, it will plow into the earth because the earth is curved. So if it's going to maintain its height and not have to climb and climb and climb and climb, it just goes in an arc. And that's why you'll see planes above us here, especially if they've come from Chicago and they're going somewhere far away, they won't fly straight overhead. They'll kind of be flying in a curve around us. That's why that is. Just some purposes of heavenly bodies, we talked about this, to separate, to be signs of the seasons, and to give light. And notice that when God says this, this is written in a kind of Hebrew poetry called a chiasm, where the separation mentioned in verses 14 and 18 are the beginning and ending of the thought, and the giving light is in verses 15 and 17 in the middle, and he mentions signs around it. This is just something of the elegance of the passage. I don't know if it's easy to see, but it does happen. The point, though, is that the earth existed first. The sun serves the earth. The existence and this of the sun, moon, and stars depends on the earth. They're here to serve us, to give us signs of things. And then Jesus says in Matthew, immediately after the distress of those days, the last days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. So when the world comes to an end, the whole thing is coming to an end. God will unmake everything that he made because he made it for our sakes. I don't know if we can get to some of these things. We're kind of running out of time. Yeah. But stars, that's a close-up of the planet Saturn. It's actually quite plain looking. And it rotates very fast. And I had a couple others. I think I took them out. And God says, it is I who made the earth and created mankind upon it. My own hand stretched out the heavens. I marshaled their starry hosts. Anybody want to ask a question here at the very end? Otherwise, that brings us to the end of day 4. And we'll pick it up with water and birds. Water creatures and flying creatures and other created things. By the way, next week, I'll be in Missouri because we have a pastor's conference in Missouri. We're not joining the Missouri Synod. We're just having a conference in Springfield, Missouri because they're part of our district. Did you know that our district goes from all of Minnesota, all of Iowa, and all of Missouri is part of our Minnesota district. So we're having our convention down there. And then I'll be back again in 2 weeks. All right? All right. God bless you. Have a good day. I will be, no, I'll, we'll all be gone. So no, if you want to meet, you can come and talk. But I'll be gone.